A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Here's what Daniel wrote to us. He had gallbladder surgery 7 years ago, and since then he's been dealing with a bunch of digestive issues. The most bothersome one, and he admits this sounds weird, is that liquids feel like they don't go down right. Water is the biggest offender. He says he's in a couple of Facebook groups for people with gastroparesis, and this strange situation seems to be remarkably common. They've talked about potential reasons, but ultimately nobody really knows. Here's the puzzle. Soda goes down much easier, but soda is full of sugar and bad for you. So his question is, with SodaStream and similar technologies, is there a way to create a soda that isn't as flavorless as sparkling water, which he really dislikes, but contains minimally unhelpful ingredients? He also mentions that people in these groups often say electrolyte water goes down better than plain tap water, so that might be another direction. And he wants something that isn't incredibly hard to prepare at home with off-the-shelf ingredients or a little ingenuity to get a lightly carbonated beverage.
So, we've got a listener who can't drink water but can drink soda. That's the puzzle. Let's break it into two parts, the body and the bottle. First, the physiology of why this happens, because the mechanism is genuinely fascinating and not at all what most people assume. Then second, the practical engineering of a better beverage that hits the same physiological buttons without the sugar.
And Daniel's not alone in this. He mentioned those Facebook groups, and that's the thing that jumped out at me. This isn't one person's quirk. It's a pattern that keeps showing up in gastroparesis and post-gallbladder communities, and nobody's really explained it to them.
Right, and the explanation does exist, at least in parts. It's scattered across different fields, swallowing research, gastroenterology, neurophysiology, but nobody's pulled it together into a coherent story for the people actually experiencing it. So that's what we're going to do. Before we can fix the drink, we need to understand the swallow. Let's get into the physiology.
Start with the carbonation. What's actually happening when a carbonated liquid hits the back of your throat that's different from still water?
The trigeminal nerve and the glossopharyngeal nerve. Those are the two main players. When carbon dioxide bubbles pop on the mucosa of your pharynx, they're not just creating a tactile sensation. The CO2 actually converts to carbonic acid on contact with the moist tissue, and that slight chemical shift, that tiny pH drop, is detected by chemoreceptors. So you're getting a double stimulus, mechanical from the bubbles, chemical from the acid. Still water gives you neither. It's just wet.
So still water is asking your swallow reflex to fire on the weakest possible signal.
And the swallow reflex isn't a simple on-off switch. It's a coordinated sequence that has to fire in precise order. Velum elevates, vocal folds close, epiglottis folds down, upper esophageal sphincter relaxes, pharyngeal constrictors contract in sequence. If any part of that chain is weak or delayed, you feel it. That's the sensation of something not going down right.
And carbonation essentially yells louder at the nerves that initiate the sequence.
Louder and through more channels. There's published research showing that carbonated water improves swallowing efficiency in patients with dysphagia, not just healthy people, people with measurable swallowing impairment. The carbonation reduces the delay between the bolus hitting the pharynx and the swallow triggering. It makes the whole sequence more robust. Think of it like the swallow reflex is a circuit that needs a certain voltage to fire cleanly. Still, water is barely above threshold, so the signal is weak and the timing sloppy. Carbonation pushes the voltage way up, so the circuit fires fast and clean.
That explains why soda is easier than water. But it doesn't explain why water became harder in the first place. Daniel didn't have this problem before surgery.
This is where the gallbladder comes in. And I want to be careful here, because the direct research linking cholecystectomy to pharyngeal dysphagia is thin. We're extrapolating from what we know about post-cholecystectomy motility changes. But the extrapolation is reasonable.
Walk me through it.
After gallbladder removal, about 10 to 15% of patients develop what's called post-cholecystectomy syndrome. The classic symptoms are upper abdominal pain, bloating, and what patients describe as indigestion, but the underlying issue is often a motility disorder. The gallbladder isn't just a storage bag for bile. Its removal changes the entire rhythm of bile delivery. Instead of a concentrated squirt timed with meals, you get a continuous slow drip of dilute bile into the duodenum.
And that disrupts the signaling downstream.
It disrupts everything downstream. The presence of bile acids in the duodenum triggers a whole cascade of hormonal responses, CCK, motilin, that regulate gut motility. When that signaling is off, you can get a kind of dysenergia. The muscles of the digestive tract stop coordinating properly. And here's the key. This dysenergia doesn't necessarily stop at the stomach. The esophagus and the upper esophageal sphincter are part of the same system.
So the upper esophageal sphincter isn't relaxing in sync with the pharyngeal contraction.
That's the hypothesis. The swallow signal says contract, but the sphincter hasn't fully relaxed yet, or it relaxes late. Either way, the bolus hits resistance. With still water, which is thin and requires precise timing, that tiny mismatch is enough to feel like something's stuck. The water just sits there for a beat too long.
And that's the sensation Daniel's describing. It doesn't go down right.
And it's absolutely not in his head. This is a measurable physiological phenomenon. The nerves and muscles are physically not coordinating the way they should. The fact that carbonation overcomes it actually proves it's mechanical. If it were anxiety or psychosomatic, carbonation wouldn't make a difference. The bubbles are providing a stronger stimulus that compensates for the weak coordination.
The fix confirms the problem. Now, what about the electrolyte water? Daniel said people in those groups report that electrolyte drinks go down better than plain tap water. How does that fit?
Different mechanism, same result. Electrolyte water has higher osmolarity than plain tap water. Tap water is hypotonic. It essentially has fewer dissolved particles than your body fluids. When hypotonic liquid hits the osmoreceptors in your oral pharynx and stomach, it triggers a different set of responses than an isotonic or slightly hypertonic liquid.
What kind of responses?
For one, gastric accommodation. That's the reflex where your stomach relaxes to accept incoming volume. We've talked about this before. When that reflex is impaired, which it often is in post-cholecystectomy patients with motility issues, still water feels like it just sits there because the stomach isn't making room for it. A liquid with higher osmolarity, with some sodium and potassium in it, changes the osmoreceptor signaling and can improve that accommodation response.
So the stomach actually relaxes better for salt water than for plain water.
In some people with impaired motility, yes. It seems backwards if you're thinking about thirst, but thirst and gastric accommodation are different systems. The second piece is nerve transmission. Sodium and potassium are literally what neurons used to fire. If you're marginally low on either, which a lot of people with chronic digestive issues are because they're not absorbing well, the nerve signals that coordinate swallowing are going to be slightly weaker. Adding electrolytes to the liquid gives those nerves more of what they need right at the point of contact.
So soda hits three things at once. Carbonation for the nerve stimulus, sugar and other solutes for osmolarity, and the acidic pH for additional chemoreceptor activation. It's a triple threat.
And that's why it works so reliably. The sugar isn't the main driver. That's a misconception. People assume soda is easier because of the sugar, because sugar makes everything feel better. The sugar is contributing to osmolarity, but you can get osmolarity from other sources.
That's the key misconception to bust right there. If you think sugar is what makes soda go down easy, you'll never find a healthy alternative.
Right. You'll keep reaching for regular soda because nothing else seems to work. But once you understand it's the carbonation, plus osmolarity, plus a little acid, you realize you can engineer that profile without any sugar at all.
So now that we know why soda is easy, the question becomes, can we engineer that effect without the sugar? Let's get into the kitchen.
The three pillars, carbonation, osmolarity, and flavor. We need to address each one independently, and we need the final product to be something Daniel actually wants to drink. Sparkling water fails on two counts, no osmolarity, and he hates the flavorlessness.
Start with carbonation. SodaStream gives you control over the bubble level. What's the target?
The sweet spot is enough to trigger the trigeminal and glossopharyngeal stimulation without causing bloating. Post-cholecystectomy patients often have reduced gastric capacity and slower emptying, so overcarbonating can backfire. You get the swallow benefit, but then you're uncomfortably full and burping for an hour.
So start low and titrate up.
On a standard SodaStream, most people do 3 to 5 pumps for regular sparkling water. I'd suggest starting at 2 pumps, which gives you a light fizz, and see if that's enough to trigger the easier swallow. If it's not, go to 3. The goal is the minimum effective dose of carbonation.
What about people who don't have a SodaStream? Are there off-the-shelf options?
You can buy plain carbonated water in bottles, but then you lose control over the carbonation level. And Daniel specifically asked about SodaStream, so let's work with that. The advantage of making it at home is you can dial it in exactly. Next pillar, osmolarity.
This is where the salt comes in.
A dash of salt. About 1/8 teaspoon per liter. That's roughly 600 milligrams of sodium, which isn't nothing, but it's also not excessive for someone who's not on a sodium-restricted diet. And at that concentration, you won't taste it as salty. It's below the taste threshold for most people, but it's enough to meaningfully change the osmolarity profile.
What kind of salt?
Sea salt or plain table salt, it doesn't matter for this purpose. The sodium chloride is what you're after. If you want to get fancy, you can use a half and half mix of sodium chloride and potassium chloride, which gets you closer to an actual electrolyte profile. Potassium chloride is sold as a salt substitute in most grocery stores. 1/4 teaspoon of that mix per liter gives you sodium and potassium without any noticeable taste.
And then the citrus.
1 tablespoon of lemon or lime juice per liter. That does 3 things. It adds a small amount of additional osmolarity from the dissolved solids. It provides the acid component that we know contributes to the chemoreceptor stimulation. And it gives you actual flavor, which addresses Daniel's complaint about sparkling water being flavorless.
So at this point, we've got carbonated water with salt and lemon juice. That's still pretty austere.
It is. And that brings us to the third pillar, flavor. Daniel was clear that he dislikes the flavorlessness of sparkling water, so we need to add something that makes this drink enjoyable without adding sugar. This is where most commercial alternatives fail. They either use sugar or they use artificial sweeteners that taste like regret.
What are the options?
Bitters are my first recommendation. A few drops of aromatic bitters, Angostura or similar, add a complex flavor profile with essentially 0 calories and 0 sugar. They're alcohol-based, but we're talking about a few drops in 1 liter of water. The alcohol is negligible. Bitters work because they stimulate bitter receptors in the pharynx, which are actually part of the same chemosensory system that detects carbonation, so you're adding another layer of neurological stimulation.
That's clever. The bitters aren't just flavor, they're contributing to the swallow reflex.
Option 2. Fresh herbs. A sprig of mint, a slice of cucumber, a few basil leaves. These add aromatic compounds that stimulate the olfactory system, which is tightly linked to the trigeminal nerve. The smell of mint alone can trigger a mild trigeminal response. And again, 0 calories.
What about sweeteners? Daniel said minimally unhealthful, not 0 everything. If he wants a little sweetness, what's the least bad option?
Liquid stevia or monk fruit extract. 3 to 4 drops per liter is usually enough to take the edge off the tartness from the citrus without making it taste like diet soda. These are non-nutritive sweeteners. They have essentially 0 effect on blood sugar, they don't feed gut bacteria the way sugar alcohols can, and they don't cause the insulin spike that high fructose corn syrup does.
Some people report digestive issues with stevia.
Some do, and if Daniel's one of them, monk fruit is usually better tolerated. Erythritol is a third option. A sugar alcohol that's mostly absorbed in the small intestine and excreted unchanged, so it doesn't cause the same bloating as other sugar alcohols. But for someone with existing motility issues, I'd start with stevia or monk fruit and see how it goes. The dose is so small, 3 or 4 drops, that even if there's a sensitivity, it's unlikely to cause problems.
So walk me through the full recipe. Assume I'm standing in my kitchen with a soda stream, and I want to make this right now.
1 liter of cold water. Cold water carbonates better than room temperature, by the way, so use water straight from the fridge. Carbonate to level 2. That's 2 short presses on the standard SodaStream button. Add 1/8 teaspoon of sea salt. Add 1 tablespoon of fresh lime juice. 3 to 4 drops of liquid stevia if you want sweetness. 2 to 3 drops of aromatic bitters if you want complexity. Stir gently. You don't want to knock out all the carbonation. And taste.
And then adjust.
This is the important part. The recipe is a baseline, not a prescription. If the swallow still doesn't feel right, bump the carbonation to level 3. If it's too tart, add another drop of stevia. If it's not flavorful enough, try lemon instead of lime, or add a sprig of muddled mint. Treat your digestive system as a research project. Daniel's already in Facebook groups comparing notes with other patients. This is the same thing, but in your own kitchen.
How does this compare to the commercial options? There are brands like Recess and Olipop that market themselves as healthier sodas.
They're using the same principles we just described. Recess is essentially carbonated water with magnesium, adaptogens, and a small amount of fruit juice. Olipop adds prebiotic fiber. They're good products, but they're expensive, $3 to $4 a can, and they're formulated for a general audience. The home version costs maybe 15 cents a liter, and you can dial in exactly what works for your specific swallow.
And you know exactly what's in it.
That's the other thing. If you have a bad reaction to something, you can isolate the variable. With a commercial product that has 15 ingredients, you can't tell if it's the stevia or the inulin or the magnesium citrate that's causing the problem.
Let me push on the minimally unhealthful framing. Daniel used that phrase. Where's the line?
It's a spectrum, not a binary. On one end, you've got regular soda with 40 grams of high fructose corn syrup per can. That's unambiguously bad for you. On the other end, you've got plain water, which is unambiguously good for you. Our recipe sits very close to the water end. The salt is fine, unless you're sodium sensitive. The citrus is fruit juice in a quantity so small it's negligible. The stevia, or monk fruit, as I said, have essentially no metabolic impact. The only thing that's even debatable is the carbonation itself, and the main concern, there's dental erosion from the carbonic acid.
Is that a real concern at this level?
At 1 or 2 liters a day of lightly carbonated water, no. The pH of carbonated water is around 5 or 6, depending on the carbonation level. That's mildly acidic, but your saliva buffers it quickly. It's not like drinking cola, which has a pH around 2.5 from the phosphoric acid. If Daniel were drinking 6 cans of soda a day, I'd worry about his teeth. 1 or 2 liters of this? Not a concern.
What about the bitters? The alcohol content?
3 drops of Angostura bitters in a liter of water. Angostura is about 44% alcohol. 3 drops is roughly 0.15 milliliters. Diluted in a liter, that's an alcohol concentration of about 0.006%. Your body produces more alcohol from digesting a piece of fruit. It's a non-issue.
So the recipe is minimal on the health downside. But I want to come back to something. You said earlier that we're extrapolating from the gallbladder to the swallow. How confident are you in that connection?
Let me think about how to put this. The connection between post-cholecystectomy syndrome and esophageal dysmotility is well documented. There are studies showing increased rates of esophageal spasm and ineffective esophageal motility in post-cholecystectomy patients. What's less documented is the specific pharyngeal dysphagia Daniel is describing, the sensation that water doesn't go down right at the level of the throat. That's where we're connecting dots between the motility literature and the dysphagia literature.
The mechanism is plausible but not proven.
Plausible and consistent with everything we know about how the upper digestive tract is regulated. The same hormones that control gallbladder contraction also influence lower esophageal sphincter pressure and gastric emptying. CCK, for example, relaxes the lower esophageal sphincter. When your CCK signaling is disrupted by the absence of a gallbladder, it's entirely reasonable that you'd get downstream effects on swallowing coordination. But I haven't seen a study that directly measures pharyngeal swallow timing before and after cholecystectomy. That study probably doesn't exist.
Which is why the Facebook groups are full of people comparing notes, and nobody has a definitive answer.
The patients are ahead of the research on this one. They've identified a pattern that clinical medicine hasn't caught up to yet. That's not unusual for post-surgical syndromes. The surgery fixes the acute problem. The gallstones and the chronic sequelae get dismissed because they're hard to measure and don't show up on a standard workup.
If someone's listening to this and thinking, that's me, that's exactly what I've been experiencing. What should they actually do?
First, try the recipe. See if it helps. If it does, that's useful information. It tells you the problem is likely mechanical and related to the strength of the swallow trigger. Second, if the problem is persistent or getting worse, get a formal swallowing assessment. A video fluoroscopic swallow study. That's the gold standard. It's a moving X-ray of your swallow, and it can catch the exact moment where the coordination breaks down.
Who does that?
A speech-language pathologist, usually in conjunction with a radiologist. Most people think speech pathologists only do speech, but swallowing disorders are a huge part of their field. A gastroenterologist can also order the study. The key is to find someone who takes the complaint seriously. Don't let anyone tell you it's in your head.
Because the fact that soda fixes it proves it's not.
That's the tell. If carbonation consistently makes the problem go away, you have a neurophysiological issue, not an anxiety issue. The bubbles are a diagnostic tool.
We've got the recipe. But what should Daniel actually do with it? Here's the practical playbook.
Three things. One, the soda effect is a physiological hack, not a sugar craving. You don't need sweetness to get the benefit. You need carbonation and osmolarity. Once you internalize that, you stop reaching for Sprite and start reaching for your soda stream. Two, treat the recipe as a baseline, not a final answer. Experiment with different citrus, different herbs, different sweeteners. Your swallow is unique. Find what triggers it best. 3. If the problem persists or worsens, this is a signal to get a formal swallowing assessment. The homemade soda is a workaround, not a cure. It manages the symptom, but it doesn't tell you why the symptom is there.
The why matters, because if the dyssynergia is progressive, you want to catch it early.
Right. Most post-cholecystectomy motility issues are stable. They don't get worse over time, but you don't want to assume that. If you're noticing that the carbonation level you needed 6 months ago isn't enough anymore, that's a data point to bring to a doctor.
I want to add one thing to the playbook. The salt in the recipe. If you're on a low-sodium diet for hypertension or heart failure, talk to your doctor before adding an eighth teaspoon of salt per liter to your daily intake. It's a small amount. But if you're drinking 2 liters a day, that's a quarter teaspoon of salt you weren't getting before. For most people, that's fine. For some, it's not.
Good catch. And if sodium is a concern, you can use potassium chloride exclusively instead of the sodium-potassium mix. That gives you the osmolarity benefit without the sodium load. The taste is slightly different, more metallic, but the citrus covers it reasonably well.
You've got your electrolyte soda. But this raises a bigger question about where this technology is heading.
Could this carbonation hack be applied to other post-surgical swallowing issues, or is it specific to gallbladder patients? I think it's broader. Any condition that weakens the swallow trigger could potentially benefit. Post-intubation dysphagia, for example. People who've had a breathing tube during surgery often have a weak swallow for days or weeks afterward. Carbonated liquids might help them too. Neurological conditions like Parkinson's, where dysphagia is a major cause of morbidity. There's already some research on carbonated water for Parkinson's-related dysphagia, and the results are promising.
The devices themselves, SodaStream and similar, they're marketed as lifestyle gadgets. Make your own soda, save money, save the environment from cans. But if carbonation has a genuine medical application for dysphagia, could these devices be repositioned as medical aids?
They'd need to go through regulatory approval, which is a long and expensive process. But the underlying technology is the same. A medical-grade carbonator wouldn't be fundamentally different from a consumer soda stream. It might have more precise pressure control, maybe a way to measure and display the exact carbonation level. But the core mechanism is identical. I could see a future where a gastroenterologist prescribes carbonated water at a specific CO2 concentration for post-surgical dysphagia, and the patient picks up a medical carbonator at the pharmacy.
The pharmacy soda stream. There's a business model in there somewhere.
It sounds absurd until you think about it. We prescribe thickened liquids for dysphagia all the time. That's a multi-million dollar industry, thickening powders and pre-thickened water. But thickened liquids are unpleasant to drink, and patient compliance is terrible. Carbonated thin liquids might work better for a subset of patients, and they're actually enjoyable. The compliance advantage alone would be significant.
Daniel's kitchen experiment is ahead of the curve. He's basically doing citizen science on his own swallow reflex.
That's what the best of these Facebook groups are. Distributed citizen science. Patients comparing notes, identifying patterns, testing interventions. The medical establishment eventually catches up, but in the meantime, people are suffering. Daniel's question is a perfect example of someone who's done the observation, identified the pattern, and is now looking for the engineering solution. We just connected the dots between his observation and the physiology that explains it.
I think that's the right place to land. The recipe is simple. Carbonated water, a pinch of salt, a squeeze of citrus, a few drops of bitters or stevia if you want them. But the principle is what matters. You're not making soda. You're building a swallow trigger.
If you try it, let us know. Daniel's going to be experimenting with this, and I'd love to hear what variations work for different people. The cutting room floor detail I wanted to mention, there's actually a study from a Japanese group that looked specifically at carbonated water and the upper esophageal sphincter. They found that the sphincter relaxation reflex is significantly faster with carbonated water than with still water, even in healthy volunteers. The difference was on the order of 50 to 100 milliseconds. That doesn't sound like much, but in swallowing, that's the difference between smooth and stuck.
50 milliseconds. That's the margin between water that goes down and water that doesn't.
That's the whole thing. A fraction of a second in the relaxation of a sphincter most people don't know they have.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop, for making this episode happen.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you've got your own weird prompt, your own physiological puzzle that nobody's explained to you, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon. Try the recipe.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.